Somebody asked me the other day how I was doing, and I realized that I didn't have an answer. I just stood there blinking, feeling like a computer that had been asked to print while the paper tray was completely jammed. I think I eventually said, "Fine," which is really just universal code for, "I'm currently decomposing in real time, but I really don't want to talk about it." Now, the truth is, I was scrolling through a video watching a building collapsing, followed immediately by an ad for a subscription razor. So I was watching people die and being offered a closer shave in the same thumb swipe. And my brain was trying to find a place for the grief, but the algorithm just wanted me to buy the blades. And it struck me that we don't really live in a society anymore. We're living in some infinite, twisted, high-definition feedback loop. Everything is an advertisement, a breaking story, an alleged critical moment in history, and we're being screamed at to have a definitive life or death opinion on things that, if the power grid went down for 48 hours, would evaporate into the nothingness they came from. And somewhere there's a server farm that's bleeding us dry by feeding on our cortisol levels. Furthermore, we're all exhausted because we're trying to solve the world's problems from our toilets, and we're failing because the problems were basically manufactured specifically to keep us from noticing that the room we're sitting in is actually on fire. So, we've been told for decades that the end of the world would be loud. We expected explosions, right? And we thought that the rebellion was a Molotov cocktail or a spray-painted A on a brick wall. But look around, and you might notice that if there isn't a revolution happening, it's not exactly in the form of a riot. It's more like a massive collective shrug. So what I mean by this is it's hundreds of millions of people slowly waking up and deciding that the urgent notification on our phones, the ones that keep telling us to constantly be outraged and constantly consume, is probably about as important as a coupon for a store that's already gone bankrupt. So, welcome to the Great American Unraveling, but also awakening, because that's fundamentally what's happening here. Now, this isn't apathy. Apathy is when you've just completely given up. This is a collective refusal. And a refusal is a choice, a tactical retreat. It's really the realization that your care is a currency, and the world is a giant casino designed to make sure that you leave the table broke. Think about it. Every morning, you wake up and the internet hands you a fresh bucket of garbage and it says, "Look at this. Be mad. Be terrified." And if you don't post a black square or a blue flag or whatever on your social media profile, you're basically labeled a war criminal. And for years, we just went along with it, running on the hamster wheel of manufactured fury until our little rodent hearts nearly exploded. But then, gradually something shifted, and we started waking up. Now, this isn't the quiet quitting that you hear about in the news. This is more like a quiet quitting of the soul. We are currently witnessing a profound shift in the human spirit's capacity for care, which has been, at this point, stretched so thin, it's practically transparent. Because you can only see so many videos of tragedies between ads for a bidet or a mobile game before your brain finally decides, just pull the fire alarm and let's exit the building. And that's where the rebellion lives, in the silence. It lives in the refusal to be moved. So you could say that it's a kind of gritty, ugly kind of piece. This would be the kind of piece you find when you realize that the burning house that you've been trying to put out with a squirt gun is actually just a movie set. So, all right, let's talk about why we're starting to just say no. Why this might be the only thing that saves us from going completely insane. So I read somewhere that the average person scrolls through about 300 feet of content every day. That's the height of the Statue of Liberty. So every single day, we're dragging our thumbs over a glass screen, hiking up a monument of ads, for car insurance, and videos of strangers doing dances that feel like a cry for help. And for what? For a little hit of dopamine? I mean, it's kind of like trying to quench your thirst by licking a dry sponge. That doesn't work very well. So we've become a society of engagement. That's the word that the tech lord ghouls prefer to use. Engagement. It sounds like a proposal, but it feels more like a hostage situation. If you aren't engaging, well, then you must be uninformed. And if you aren't informed, you're a problem. But being informed currently mostly just means having a constant low-grade fever of anxiety about things that you can't change. So the system wants your attention because attention is the only currency that hasn't been devalued yet. I mean, they've already taken your money. And now they want the minutes you spend thinking before you go to sleep. So refusal in this context looks like something like a digital picket line. It's not about unplugging to go on some overpriced wellness retreat in the desert to find your soul. It's about realizing that your soul was never really lost. It's just been buried under 3,000 unread notifications. So there was a philosopher, Guy Debord, who wrote about what he called the society of the spectacle. So in a nutshell, he argued that life has been replaced by its representation. We don't live in moments anymore. We stage them for the spectacle. Well, for example, we go to a concert to prove we were there to a crowd of people who weren't there. So it's kind of like this hall of mirrors, and we're all just smashing our faces against the glass, hoping to see a reflection that looks happy or something. But what would happen if you just put the phone in a drawer for a while? The first 10 minutes are probably going to be terrifying. You realize you have no idea what to do with your hands. And then you start to feel the itch, the withdrawal. So that's the dopamine addiction kicking in. And this is the part of your brain that's been trained like a lab rat to expect a pellet every time you see a red bubble. But then something weird happens. The world starts to get quiet. And this isn't the peaceful quiet that they put on meditation apps with the fake rain sounds. It's more like a heavy, gritty, real kind of quiet where you start to notice the way the light hits the dust motes in your room. Maybe you notice that your chair is actually kind of uncomfortable, or you notice that you're just bored. And it's actually in the boredom where the rebellion begins, because boredom is the enemy of the system. If you're bored, you're not consuming. You're not being radicalized. If you're bored, you might actually start to think. And thinking is the one thing that they didn't budget for. And, you know, we're told that if we have a fear of missing out, you know, FOMO, we're constantly told that or made to feel that way. But I think we should have a fear of the opposite, getting in. Fear of being sucked into the machinery of all this manufactured outrage. So I've started practicing what I call JOMO, the joy of missing out. And I got to admit, it's incredibly satisfying not knowing what everyone's mad about today. It's sort of like being the only person in the room who hasn't realized the floor is lava, only to realize that the floor isn't actually lava. It's just an expensive orange carpet. So at this point, we've been conditioned to think that if we don't have an opinion on everything, we don't even exist. But I'm finding that the less I say and the less I look at, the more I actually start to feel like a human being again. Not a user or a consumer, not a data point. Just a guy in a room or wherever, breathing air that doesn't cost 99 cents a minute. And yeah, it's essentially a detox, but it's a messy one, like quitting smoking while living inside a chimney. The world is designed to pull you back in, though, because it needs your undivided attention. Because if you stop caring about the spectacle starves and dies. And that's the one thing that people running the show can't allow. All right. So let's talk about the hustle. We've turned survival into something like a competitive sport. And the prize is just, well, it's just more survival. And it's a lame trick, isn't it? Because we've been convinced that if we aren't optimizing every waking second, we're essentially rotting. If you're not turning your hobby into a side hustle, or your side hustle into some kind of brand or whatever, you're failing at the business of being alive. It kind of reminds me of something Charles Bukowski once said about the working the 9-to-5. He basically asked, I'm sort of paraphrasing here, how the hell a person could enjoy being awakened at 6:30 a.m. by an alarm clock, leap out of bed, get dressed, force feed, and fight traffic for an hour or whatever to get to a place where they essentially made a lot of money for somebody else, and then were asked to be grateful for the opportunity to do so. But these days, we've taken that nightmare and we've actually added things like Slack notifications. And now the office is in your pocket. This grind, you know, it's not just a place you go anymore. It's become a whole state of being. We're all, you know, chief executive officers of our own little misery bubbles. The refusal here it's not being lazy. Refusal is a strategic conservation of energy. It's looking at the corporate ladder and realizing it's leaning against a burning building. So why the hell would you climb it? So you can have a better view of the fire? And then there's the issue of the stuff. The materialism. We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like. It's an old line, yeah. But, I would say that that's more true than ever, because the stuff now has become part of our identity. We don't just buy a jacket. We're buying a lifestyle. We buy a version of ourselves that we think, will finally make us feel somehow complete. But, you know, have you ever noticed that feeling lasts like, what, maybe 20 minutes? And then you're just a person with a new jacket. Still wondering why you feel like a hollowed out tree or whatever. Henry David Thoreau went to live in a shack by a pond because he realized that most of the luxuries we work for are positive hindrances to the elevation of humankind. So he said that you are rich in proportion to the number of things you can afford to let alone. Now think about that. How much can you afford to not care about? How much can you afford to not buy? Refusal is the realization that less, it isn't a sacrifice, it's a liberation. When you stop wanting things, you stop being a slave to the system that keeps pushing them on you. And you start to realize that the standard of living we're all chasing is actually just a standard of stress. I mean, we're working these jobs we hate to buy garbage we don't use, to fill homes we're never in because we're always at work. It's basically like a circular firing squad. And this refusal of hustle culture is the ultimate rebellion, because it's refusal of the system's fundamental math. The system requires growth, constant, cancerous, never-ending growth. Totally unsustainable. If you can decide that you have enough, the machine starts to smoke, because it doesn't know what to do with a person who's content. A content person is just a broken consumer. So by saying no to the promotion that will kill your soul, or no to the the latest tech upgrade that really adds nothing to your life, you're performing an act of industrial sabotage. You're reclaiming your time, the only thing, which is really the only thing you actually own, and the only thing that you unfortunately can't get more of. You know, we're constantly told that we need to leave a mark on the world. But maybe the best thing we can do is leave as little a mark on the world as possible. Just walk softly, buy less crap. Work enough to eat and to keep the rain off your head. And then, for the most part, just stop. Sit on the porch or wherever. Watch the neighbors argue over their lawn care. Realize that you've opted out of the war, and the peace feels like a drug. If you actually manage to stop scrolling and stop the scrolling and the buying and all the striving, you're left with something rather terrifying: yourself, or what you think is yourself, anyway. And that's exactly why most people don't do this. That's why we keep the TV on and the phone constantly buzzing, because when the noise stops, that's when the ghosts start talking. All that stuff you've been ignoring, you know, the regrets, the weird underlying dread, the realization that you don't actually know who you are without your job title, that shit all comes rushing in. But this, I think this is where the shift in the human spirit happens. We've been living in this convoluted culture that values external intelligence. Like, how much do you know about the news, or how much do you know about what some corrupt politician said at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday? So we've all become, you know, these so-called experts on everything except our own internal landscape. So the refusal I'm talking about is it's a pivot toward emotional intelligence and self-awareness. And I don't mean the kind that they teach in corporate seminars to, you know, help you manage your team better or whatever. I'm talking about the raw, gritty work of truly looking at your own shadow, facing that and not blinking. So, Alan Watts used to talk about how we're all under the hallucination that we're separate egos in bags of skin fighting against an external world. We think we're these little soldiers in a hostile universe, but when you refuse the extra or the external drama, that hallucination starts to dissolve. So this is an aspect of non-duality where you realize that you aren't really in the world. You are the world. And when you start to develop self-awareness, you overcome and you start to overcome the ego. The all the manufactured outrage stops working on you. And so if you see the hook coming, you just kind of swim around it. And this applies to so many things in life. Someone tries to piss you off about a culture war issue or something, and you look at them like they're trying to sell you a used toothbrush. Because you realize that your anger is a resource and you've been letting people strip mine it for profit. But if you can focus on developing emotional intelligence, you start to change the capacity for care. Now, right now, our sense of care and empathy is spread so thin, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. We care about 100 global tragedies because the headline told us to, but we don't know the names of the people living in the apartment next door. You know, this makes for a fake kind of empathy. It's a performance. But refusal allows you to pull that care back in. It's like a controlled burn in a forest. You know, you clear out the brush so the big trees can actually grow. You start to care about things that are real, like the way you speak to yourself. The quality of your silence and the way you actually show up for the two or three people in your life who would actually show up for your funeral. This isn't selfishness. It's sustainability. You can't save the world if you're a hollowed out wreck of a human who's addicted to dopamine and debt. A society made of self-aware, humble, unmanipulatable individuals is a society that can't be governed by fear. We have been told that self-improvement is about adding things, you know, skills, adding muscle, adding money, etc., etc. But the real self-improvement is actually subtractive. It's peeling back the layers of the social conditioning until you find the person who was there before the world told you who to be. And it's about realizing that meaning isn't something you find. It's what's left over when you stop chasing all the nonsense. Think of it as the silence between the notes. And in that silence, you find a version of truth that isn't being shouted at you. It's a truth that's quiet and honest, and probably for the first time in a long time, actually sustainable. Okay. So here's the inevitable part where I ask, what do we do now? We can't all just flee to a shack in the woods and live on berries. We have rent. We have, reality. The system is designed to make opting out look like a death sentence. And unfortunately, for a number of people, it probably would be. And I fully understand that. But you don't really have to burn the bridge to get off the road. You just have to stop paying the toll. So maybe start with a little strategic incompetence. Stop being so good at the things that drain you. If you're the most efficient person at work at a job that you hate, your only reward is going to be more work, right? So maybe just be adequate. Reclaim that extra gear of effort for something that doesn't involve a spreadsheet or whatever. Then starve the monster. If a piece of news doesn't change your life in the next 24 hours, give yourself the gift of not knowing. The world will keep spinning without your outrage, I promise. There's no prize for being the most well-informed person in the psych ward, at least not that I know of. Maybe try buying nothing new for like a month and watch the need for a new gadget itch like a phantom limb before it finally evaporates. And you might realize that your desires aren't even yours. They're just ghosts injected into your brain by an algorithm. And lastly, I would say try to learn to sit in a room or somewhere alone. No phone, no noise, just you and the walls or the trees or whatever it might be. And yeah, it'll probably be miserable at first. Then it'll be boring. And then finally, you might come to some honest clarity. And if you do this kind of thing long enough, it does start to change your brain chemistry. You know, we're always hearing about how the world is ending. And yeah, maybe it is. But also, maybe what's ending is the world that they built, you know, the world, the one that's rotting. And I say, frankly, it's about time. This system, it needs your continual yes to survive. But maybe try giving it a no instead. But not a loud no that they can, sell back to you. Just a quiet, deadpan no that walks away. Turn off the light, close the door, and go for a walk. get away from the screen. You know, the machine can't follow you into the woods yet. Well, at least not until those robot dogs are unleashed on us. As a matter of fact, the woods is where I'm headed right now. So, on that note, as always, thanks again for listening.